Wednesday the 17th of March, Beit Nissen, Rabbi Joseph Perlman. What were the Rabbonim doing in Bnei Brak?
Okay, we're moving into the Haggadah territory, and the subject is, I think it says there's something, but what were the Rebbe's doing in Bnei Brak? Well, the Maase of Bnei Brak is a remarkably interesting Maase brought towards the early part of the Haggadah, but it's full of fascinating questions, and like anything, when you've got one or two questions, you have to ask many more questions in order for the whole thing to become clear. Well, I've got, I think, a list of 11 questions, most of which will be answered by a different mahalach in the whole Maase. Let's start from the beginning. The Maase says, Maase b'Rabbi Eliezer v'Rabbi Yeshua v'Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah v'Rabbi Akiva v'Rabbi Tarfon shayu mesumim b'Bnei Brak. Now the first question is, what are we trying to learn from this Maase? It's telling us that there were great Talmidei Chachamim who were staying all night and learning. But, you know, that's the mitzvah. And why, what does this add to the normal mitzvah that we all do? What's so special about it? Obviously that's not a difficult question that can be answered, but it's still got to be understood in the overall context. The second thing to look at is at the people who were there. It seems there were five Tanoim, but it's actually quite confusing as to why these particular five Tanoim happened to be together. And there are a lot of questions about that, because, to take an example, we know the famous Gemara that Rabbi Eliezer never left his home for Yom Tov. He says, Meshabeach ani eso atzlonim, I praise the people who are lazy in the sense that they don't leave their homes for Yom Tov. It's a mitzvah to be with your family and your home. And we know that Rabbi Eliezer lived in a place called Lud. And if you've ever driven from Yerushalayim to Bnei Brak, you'll know you come to Lud well before you reach Bnei Brak, and it's quite a long walk outside the Tchum, and therefore, how is it possible that Rabbi Eliezer ended up in Bnei Brak when he really never left home on Yom Tov? That's one question. The next question, a very complicated question, is the time scale, as how is it possible that Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah could possibly have been there at the same time as these great Talmidei Chachamim? You might say, well, we know that Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah was at the time of Rabbi Akiva. That is true. We know he was a very young person at that time. But it's more complicated than that, because the problem is that Rabbi Eliezer was it was put in Cherem, or quasi-Cherem, in the Maase of the time of Achnoi. Now, if that is the case, then it must be that this took place, this Maase took place before he was put in Cherem. Because if he was put in Cherem, how was he sitting with all the others? He wouldn't be allowed to sit together with them. You've got to stay at a distance. So it must therefore be that this Maase took place before that Maase. However, there is another problem, which is that we know when they were considering the various people to become the Nossi, when they deposed Rabbi Gamliel, that Rabbi Eliezer wasn't considered for the princehood. He was never considered even. Even though he was the Godel Hador, he wasn't considered. The Gemara says there, why don't we take Rabbi Akiva? Well, he's got no schus ofus. Why don't we take this one for this problem? And eventually they hit upon Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. The question, though, is that why not Rabbi Eliezer? He was the Godel Hador. They couldn't take Rabbi Yeshua, the Gemara says, because he was Baal Ramaisa. If you remember the Gemara in Brachos, we can't spend too much time on it, but if you look through, you'll see that the various Tanoim were considered, but Rabbi Eliezer wasn't even considered. So therefore, that indicates that Rabbi Eliezer was already in Cherem at the time of the Nasius. Therefore, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah must have been there must have been after the Nasius when he was appointed. At that stage, the Bavli says he was 18 years old, but the Rashami says he was only 12 years old. Now, if he was 12 years old at that Maase, and there was two Maasim before that, because the Haggadah must have preceded both of these Maasim, as we said, just said, that means he must have been a little boy about 6 or 7 years old. And therefore, how is it possible that he's mentioned with the other Tanoim, sitting there, boy of 6 and 7 years old, with the great Tanoim. Now this kusha is asked by the Toldos Tanoim Va'amoroim, which is about Hyman, who's a god who wrote a beautiful svarim in the last century. Yes, about 100 years ago. No, not quite that long ago, but in between the wars, he wrote some beautiful svarim, and he says the kash is so strong, he asks, that he says there's obviously a tall sofa in the Maisa. It was Reish Aleph Beis Ayin, and instead of being Rabbi Loza ben Azari, he said they made a mistake, it was really Rabbi Loza ben Aroch. And with that he answers lots of questions, which we'll see, but I would like to say that although it's a very clever hamtzah, it cannot be right. It's not possible, because how is it possible all of us are all saying Rabbi Loza ben Azari when it's meant to be Rabbi Loza ben Aroch? It doesn't add up. Quite apart from that, if you look at the text of the Rambam, following this Maisis, we have the Maisis of Rabbi Loza ben Azariah. So he says, well, it just, since it's talking about the same idea of Haggadah, nighttime, etc., it brings a Maisa. But if you look at the text of the Rambam's Haggadah, he says, Omar Lohem Rabbi Loza ben Azariah. Now, if it had been Rabbi Loza ben Aroch, it couldn't have said Omar Lohem Rabbi Loza ben Azariah. So it's quite clear from the Rambam that this was not Rabbi Loza ben Aroch, it was Rabbi Loza ben Azariah. Secondly, there's a famous Tosafot in Ksubas who asks a question, another one of our 11 questions which we're coming across, is that why is Rabbi Loza ben Azariah mentioned prior to Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva was an old Zokin of 100 years old. He was the Shmo Holech one part of the world to the other, the Gemara says. And Rabbi Loza ben Azariah was a very young child. So why is Rabbi Loza ben Azariah mentioned before him? Now, that's quite clear that Tosafot had the gist of Rabbi Loza ben Azariah. Now, if the correct gist had been Rabbi Loza ben Aroch, you might mean to tell me Tosafot didn't know that? The Tosafot made the same mistake? It doesn't make sense. And also, we never see such a gist anywhere. The Haggadah it goes all over the world. There's no text which has this. So therefore, we're stuck with our problem as to why is it Rabbi Loza ben Azariah when he was a boy of 6 years old, according to this. Let's ask some more questions. The next question is, why are they all got no father's names except Rabbi Loza ben Azariah? Why is the only one who's called Ben? You might say, well, that's how they were called. But you can't simply say that. The question is that normally when you've got a Tanna, the stam name is the first or the most important of the Tanna mentioned. So, for example, there were many Rabbi Yeshua's and many Rabbi Eliezer's. But the stam Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua are the first ones who occur in the first door of Tanoim and the most important ones. Now, there were many Rabbi Lozars as well. But stam Rabbi Lozar is not Rabbi Loza ben Azariah. Stam Rabbi Elozar in the Tana is Rabbi Loza ben Shamua. And stam Rabbi Lozar of the Amorim is Rabbi Loza ben Pedos. It's well known. How is it that Rabbi Loza ben Shamua, who's the next door, was a chav of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi, how is it that he got the zechus of being stam Rabbi Loza, where this Rabbi Loza ben Azariah was clearly greater because he was a nosi and he was one of the great gedolim in Shas, he gets the name Ben Azariah. Next question we've already asked, Tosafot asked the question in Ksubas, what's the order? Why is it that Rabbi Loza ben Azariah precedes Rabbi Akiva, who is much older and much senior to him? By the same token, we have another problem, that Rabbi Tarfon was also superior, and he should have been mentioned earlier. Why is he mentioned at the very, very end? He was, true that originally he was the Rebbe of Rabbi Akiva, but afterwards he sort of became the Chavrus, and perhaps even less significant, but still, he should have been mentioned earlier on. Especially he was a Kohen, and Rabbi Akiva wasn't, so we need to know what this particular order is all about. The next question is that, halachically, we have a problem here, because Rabbi Eliezer holds, like Rabbi Loza ben Azariah, that the Seder night only goes on to Chatzos. And you know there's a whole shaila when to eat the Afikoimon, many people hold that you should be mahadah to finish the afikoman before chatzos, And then you've got the famous or infamous Tanai of the Na'avne Nezer, everyone knows about it, everyone talks about it. And then you've got those people, the brisket shitter, who said, no, it doesn't matter, you can go on till the morning. And you've got different shitters. But the Rambam shitter is that you can say it all night, and many people are making like the Rambam, but most people are makbid to try to finish the Afikoman before Chatzos. Now, this is a well-known Machlokas is quoted in the Bir Aloch, brings the different shittas, but the question is, why were Rebbe Eliezer and Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah staying up after Chatzos? It was clearly because of Yetzias Mitzrayim, they were there, they weren't just them learning Torah. But so what were they doing there? And if you say they were just learning, then what they could learn any night. What's so special about this? And there's another problem. If they were just learning Torah, it's unlikely that the Talmidim wouldn't have been there too. Where were the Talmidim? Normally, you know, Peter, you have a Rav who's sitting there learning, they're learning together, so the Talmidim are around watching. Here the Talmidim were excluded completely. Where were they? So if you're going to say it was Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, so it's a particular mitzvah which didn't really necessarily involve all the Talmidim so much as Limud HaTorah, although you could say it should have done, but nonetheless, it's possible that you can get a way out of it. But if you're going to say there was Stam learning Torah, then all the Talmidim should have been there too. So why did they continue after Chatzos? Since two of those Tanam held, Chatzos was the end of the story. Next question. We've got the problem that there were mesubin b'bnei Barak. Mesubin means they were lying, leaning down. Now, the din of a seba is this. A Talmud is not allowed to do a seba before his Rav, in front of his Rav. And since Rabbi Akiva was clearly a Talmud of Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer, how is it possible that he was doing a seba with the others? And by the same, we've already mentioned before, that how is it possible that Rebbe Eliezer was doing a Seba if in fact it was already after the Cheirem. Now, it's true that Rebbe Akiva became greater later, but before the Cheirem, you certainly must have been a Talmud, and therefore, how could he be doing a Seba with the others? And the same problem would be for Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah too. The next question, we told about this Masa, and we're told it was in B'nai Barak. Now, who cares where the Masa was? What difference does it make? What's this telling us? It was a Masa B'nai. Masa B'nai B'liezer, Shoyim Masubin. Why tell us in B'nai Barak? In fact, you could say, well, it likes to identify places, but there's got to be some point in having it in B'nai Barak. And there's a most complicated Abarbanel who says, what's this name, B'nai Barak? Where did you get this name, B'nai Barak? You should master Shai B'Brak. Where's this B'nai Barak? Now, it looks very much as if he's overlooked, which is highly unlikely. He's overlooked a Mefurisha Pasuk in Yehoshua, which says there was a town called B'nai Barak, and also that Rabbi Akiva lived in B'nai Barak. So how could the Abarbanel miss that out? But he says, therefore, it's nothing to do with the place. B'nai Barak means something completely different. He says B'nai Barak means, B'nai cannot mean they were sitting with the children of Barak. It doesn't make sense. He says B'nai refers to Kelim Chadoshim, all the beautiful Kelim which you bring out on Pesach, and the Barak means they were sparkling and shining. That's how he learns Pshat. Obviously, there's a problem. He had a problem. It's true it's a posuk in Tanakh, and it's true it's where Bekiva came from, that town, but the Barabana says it's irrelevant. It's difficult to believe that Barabana did not know Mefurisha posuk, or did not know a Mefurisha Gemara. It doesn't make sense. Probably what he means is, it's irrelevant here. Why mention it? And therefore, he goes along and he suggests it's to do with the fact that they brought out their beautiful kelim. It's a remez, it's a teaching, it's a lesson. On Pesach, you bring out all your best kelim, even those difficult times. There's another chat of the Chidor. I don't know any B'nai Brakis here, but he says, you take the Gematria of B'nai Brak, it comes to Hasaton. And they were all sitting around there at the Seder night. Well, his chat was, they were trying to drive the Soton away. And that's when it says B'nai Barak, they were sitting there driving away the Soton, because after all, everyone wants to go to sleep and you get tired. But they were driving away the Soton because they wanted to stay awake. Well, I don't know what you think of gematrias, but it is interesting that Bnei Brak is Hasotom. Anyhow, we need to know that what is it about Bnei Brak which is relevant to our story. The next question is, it says they didn't remember it was time for Krishna. Now, that's very, very difficult. How is it possible the great Gedolim are so absorbed in their learning that they forget to do a mitzvah? Can you imagine, out of Yom Kippur, they're so busy learning that they forget Yom Kippur's coming in? I mean, does it make sense to you? They're eating or the learning, and it's time for the Siddur Masek, and they're so busy learning, they forget all about it, and they're completely absorbed in their learning, and then Yom Kippur comes in. Or Rosh Hashanah, and they forget to blow the shofar because they're too busy learning that morning. It just doesn't make any sense. So what's the difference between that and Krishna? Why is it that the Talmidim, it's time for Krishna now. Why should the Talmidim have to come and tell them it's time for Krishna? They should know themselves. Either they're busy learning. Yes, we understand that learning is vitally important. You can get absorbed and carried away. There are many stories about people who have been carried away with their learning. But there is an automatic safety mechanism that when a mitzvah has to be done, somehow or other, it will be remembered. And they didn't have alarm clocks in those days. They didn't have to be remembered that way. It's got to be that innately, when the mitzvah to be done, a godel knows that mitzvah is time to do that mitzvah, and something happens and something clicks and does the mitzvah. Why did they have to be told by all the Talmidim that this was the case? And as we've already asked, why were the Talmidim excluded? Where had they gone to? Why couldn't they have been participating in the same masibah? Why did they have to be excluded? Right. So I think that if we don't start getting towards the answer, the questions will remain just questions, and there are so many of these questions, it quite clearly something has to be click in order to get the scenario correct. Now, it would seem that because of all these particular kushas, that what could have happened is as follows. Clearly this event was unusual in the sense that these five Tanoim came together at this particular place, at this particular time, when all these other factors militate against this happening in this way. So the suggestion is like this. It could be that, and we know that the Meisim and the Tosefta, etc., where the Chachamim sometimes had to go away from home in order to save Klal Yisrael. Especially at the Roman times, there were many takonas by the Romans, many gezeiros which the Romans made, which put the Israel in very, very big difficulty. They didn't like any learning of Torah. They made a gezeira against it, and certain mitzvahs they tried to preclude. And they made also various decrees taking the Jewish money away from them, etc. It could be that at this particular time, these greatest gedolim had to go to Rome in order to try to put things right. Now we have similar maisim with Rabban Gamliel, where we know that Rabban Gamliel, for example, the famous Tosis in Bar Matzia about giving the Trumas and the Maisus, and it came to the time of the Biur, which is just at the time of Pesach, and what happened was they'd left their tithe produce in Yisrael, and they were on the ship. How did they do it? So Rabban Gamliel found a Kohen, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and he found a Levi, he found Rabbi Yeshua, and then he found Rabbi Akiva, he gave him the mice on it, etc. So he managed to get rid of all the mice, even though they were on the ship outside. That means they were out there for Pesach. And sometimes it did happen. It's not like today, you just get on an aeroplane and you come home. Those days, it went to Rome and had to come back. It's a big mahalach, and if there was a delay in the ship, it could be that they didn't get back in time. And there's such a mice which is mentioned with Rabban Gamliel that they didn't manage to get back. It could be that on this occasion, let's assume that they were coming back, and they came back just on Erev Yom Tov. It could be that the ship docked in the port. The port in those days was the port of Jaffa. That was the port. Jaffa was the port. We know that from Sefer Yonah. Haifa hadn't yet become the port that it has done today, and Ashdod probably was in Philistine territory. So the port that everybody used in those days was the port of Jaffa. Now, what happens when they got to Jaffa? It's Erev Pesach. You've got no fast cars. You've got to get somewhere to do something. Now, it could be that Rabban Gamliel, being the Nossi, was met with a bevy of fast horses or whatever. They were waiting for Rabban Gamliel there, the Nossi, and they schlepped him off straight off to Yerushalayim as quickly as possible because he's the Nossi and he gets special treatment. But the other Tanoim, what are they going to do? Well, Rabbi Eliezer can't get back to Lud. It's too far from Jaffa. And we've got Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfa. Rabbi Akiva we do know he lived in Bnei Brak. So they made a discussion between themselves, and they decided, look, we better go to the nearest town, otherwise we're going to be not going to have Seidna, we're not going to have Pesach. So they get on. Where's the nearest town to Jaffa? Well, you all know the Jaffa's part of Tel Aviv, and Bnei Brak is a suburb of Tel Aviv. I mean, now Tel Aviv is a suburb of Bnei Brak, but originally this is how it was. So then what happened? I mean, Tel Aviv was only founded in the last century. Bnei Brak has been there for centuries. As we know, the Bnei Bonov Shalhamon long the Torah of Bnei Brak. They were also in Bnei Brak. So it goes back a long way. Sorry? Of whom? It could be. Anyhow, so what happens with this? They go back, therefore, with Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is the nearest town, and he happens to be the Rav of the town. So they go back to the town of Rabbi Akiva, and they're all there in Bnei Brak. So, that would answer the problem of why Rebbe Eliezer is not at home in Lud. In Ochanami, he normally wouldn't leave home, but here he had no choice. He had to get there. He has to go somewhere for Yom Tov, and he's with the others, he goes. Secondly, it could also answer the Kashla Torah Tanum V'Amoroim. It's true that normally he wouldn't have done Hasebo together with the others, but because it was an emergency situation, and because he was part of the Mishlachas who were going to deal with the safety of Klal Yisrael, sometimes you may have to make allowances. So it could be that he had to come, he had to be there, or maybe they kept a slight distance from him, maybe, or not. There's another test of that kusha, which would indicate that Rabbi Eliezer actually had not yet had that maisa, but that's a different mahalach. At the moment, let's assume that he came to Bnei Barak with the others, because it was an emergency situation and they all had to be there together. Now, why did the Tanidim not wear excluded? We know it was a time when the Romans had made a terrible gzera against them, and they were worried that if they learned Torah Barabim, they would be in danger. Therefore, they had to go to a place where it would be in secret, where people wouldn't be able to report them to the authorities. And there is a raya for that, because we know that another brisa which tells us that they were in at that time in Aliyas ben Choyr, a different maisa, but it's a similar situation where they used to learn in an aliyah, in an attic, this may be in a cellar, or it didn't say where this maisa was in the house, but it could have been in a place where they could not have been reported. And therefore they did not want to have their Talmidim with them, because if you have too many people, it becomes double troublesome. And secondly, they didn't want to get their Talmidim into trouble. So they decided to be together in this room. However, they wanted to let the Talmidim know at least that they were doing this. The Talmidim should at least know that they're there. And they said, listen, since it's going to be so dark, we won't be able to see what time Krishna is. Please come and tell us when Krishna is. And that's why the Talmidim had to come and wake them up. The Talmidim were the form of alarm clock for them because of the Shas HaShmad, and because they had to be there in secret. So that would explain why they all came in this hidden place, and why it was in Bnei Brak. Now, it also answers another question. It's very well known that Bnei Barak was the town of Rabbi Akiva. This is a standard answer. Since it was his town of Rabbi Akiva, he's the Rav of the Shtot. The din is, if the person is the Rav of the Shtot, you have to defer to him. And even a Rebbe sometimes has to show respect for his Talmud if it's the makom of the Talmud. Now, since it was Rabbi Akiva's makom, and the meaning of his makom was to say all night, out of respect for him, Rabbi Lezer and Beshua deferred to him and were prepared to, didn't walk out at Chatzos. There's another teretz that they went on after Chatzos. There's a different teretz given to Moshe Sternberg and other people although the mitzvahs of Pesach go on till Chatzos, according to Elazar and Azariah, the mitzvah of Matzah and the Ragod, not the Ragod, the mitzvah of Matzah, there is still a din of Leil Shimurim, which means that Mitzvah Sippur could continue all night, even according to Rabbi Elazar and Azariah. So that is that teretz too. But I'm saying, even without that teretz, it could be that they were deferring to Rabbi Akiva because he was the Rav. I remember Maisa in Sunderland, and I'll never forget this Maisa. At the time, Rabbi Brody was the chief rabbi, and Rabbi Babad Zichron Levracha was the Rav of the Shtot, and Rabbi Brody came for Shabbos to Sunderland. Now, where the Rav sat, it was next to the Aron Kodesh. There was a place for 1.5 people. There's a room here for 1.5 people in the Rav's seat. Now, the Rav's the Shtot. He can't come and sit in where the Gabbai, the Prime Ministers, are all going to the people. And on the other hand, Rabbi Brody's the chief rabbi of the whole of the country. He's got to have derech eretz for him. And therefore, the position demanded. So who is going to sit in that spot? Now remember clearly what the Rav tried to do. On the other side there was a chazan spot, and the Rav said, look, I'll tell you what, I'll sit in my spot and I'll put the chief rabbi in the chazan spot. The chazan refused. I've never seen the situation. I was gobsmacked. I was a little boy at the time. And I said, how can the chazan, 90% of the days he's on the Amud anyhow, so why can't he? No, he's not sitting in my seat. I'm the chazan. It's my seat. He can't come there. I'll never forget that. So what did the Rav do? The Rav was a pikeach. He didn't want to start fighting with the chazan. That's the first lesson of Gabbos, is you don't get the Rav and the chazan fighting with each other. So what did he do? The Rav stood here, and Rabbi Brody sat there. And the Rav stood up for the whole of davening. The whole of davening, from beginning to end, he stood. And Rabbi Brody says, listen, don't you want to sit down? And he said, Rabbi says, no, I normally daven standing, which is not true. And he sat there. The only time the Rav sat is when they called Rabbi Brody up for Shlishi. And the Rav goes, oh, you got a bit of nuts. Now, I'll never forget that. This is the point here. The Rav was the Rav of Shtot. Rabbi Brody was the chief rabbi. And they both have 1.5 seats between them. How do you get through that? What do you do in such a situation? Okay. I'll tell you what Rabbi Bad did, and I must say that Maisa of Rabbi Bad gave me more Musa and more Chashivas for the Rav than anything he might have said or done. There are many other things like that he did. He was a real Rav of the old style and knew exactly how to make Shalom in the community. Anyhow, what I'm saying here is the same thing happens here. Not exactly the same thing, but you've got a situation where Rabbi Akiva is the Rav and Rabbi Yez is the Rebbe. Some said that by this time Rabbi Akiva had become a Talmud Chover, and a Talmud Chover is slightly different. The Talmud Chover you can do. Some people say that although a Talmud must not do a Sebe before the Rebbe gives a Rishus, is different. There are all sorts of different truths. But what I'm suggesting is that according to the Mahalach, which I'm learning, it's true you can answer each of these individual questions separately, but they all come together as one big whole. Now, we haven't answered all the questions, but we have answered why it's in Bnei Brak. We have answered all the questions of the halachic questions of Seba. We've answered the questions of what Rabbi Eliezer was doing there and so forth. We're still left with one or two other in Yonim, which might worth mentioning quickly. Why were they mentioned? These particular five were particularly mentioned. What's the lesson for us? Well, it's very well known that this answer is seen in the Kerabat Tzvi and it's in other places. If you look at it, there's another question which I didn't ask, which I should have done. On the balance of probabilities, how likely is it if five people come together that none of them will be Yisrael Miyuchas? If I take any five people sitting around here, I bet you at least three of them will be Yisraelim. At least one is almost, it'll be impossible for none of those five people to be a Yisrael. Now, look at this. Rabbi Eliezer was either a Kohen or a Levi. That's a whole interesting shaila, which he was. because Reb Moshe said Yirotz Nisidei Yemecholatza, it's Mashma, he was a lady. And there's another Gemara which is Mashma, he was a Kohen. So we're not quite sure whether he was a lady or a Kohen, but he certainly wasn't a Yisrael. Rabbi Yishua ben Hanani is quite clear he was a lady. You remember the famous Gemara, Anim and Asherim, Batim and Asherim, he was a lady. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah obviously was a Kohen, Sirila Ezra, he was a Kohen. Rabbi Tarfon, everybody knows he was a Kohen, Kohenim Ragzonim Heim, you know, they'll get into a temple. Rabbi Tarfon is an example of this, he used to give a Kapeach and his Bonah, famous Gemara, Rabbi Tarfon is a Kohen. That leaves just Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva ben Yosef, says the Rambam, Yosef Aviv was a Ger Tzedek. So why therefore is there not a single Yisrael among these five Tanoim? I should have mentioned that as another question before. Sorry? Of course he's a Yisroel, but he's not a Yisroel Meyuchas. I'm saying, how many people have we got who are Gerim? You know, there weren't that many. So the answer is that it's telling some additional Kiddush that all these five people never would have had any Shibud in Mitzrayim. Kohenim Levim weren't Meshubadim. Rabbi Akiva wouldn't have been in Emetzal altogether. So what do they have to say? They're thank you, Kosh Baruch, for taking us out into some time. Kamashmon, it doesn't matter who you are, you've got a Chiyuv even. So that's what they say, that's why these five were chosen. Why Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is mentioned before Rabbi Akiva, Tosfos already deals with that because he became the Nasi subsequently. And therefore, since although at the time he wasn't the Nasi, he might have been younger, He could still the covered of subsequently being called bin Nasi made him become first, but it could be more than that. According to Al Mahalach before, I asked another question: why was he called Azariah, Ben Azariah? And the answer to this is interesting. Really, he should have been Reb Elazar Stam, but the point was, all the Torah of Reb Elazar and his greatness came because he had a father called Azariah. Remember the famous command at the beginning of Zvachim, Shimon Achi Azariah. Azariah put all his money and his koichas into the learning of his child and his brother and his mishpocha, and people make that mistake. They give a lot of money to other yeshivas, but they don't put money into their own children. Azariah gave all his money to stockers, but he was makbid to give stockers to the way his children and his family were. Because of that, the Chazal wanted to show that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, this is not just Stam Rabbi Elazar, a lot of the schus comes from his father, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Now what's the central feature of the Haggadah? The central feature of the Haggadah is that we should teach our children, give the Torah over, give the Sipurit Sis Mitzrayim to the next door. So the person to stick in the middle of all the five, the linchpin of the whole thing, couldn't be better than Rabbi Elazar, because he's a prime example of a child who's become a prodigy through the koichas that the father put into him. So that would also explain why Chazal Davka wanted to put Rabbi Elazar in the middle of the five, and Davka called him Ben Azariah to show that is what it's all about. Well, we've run out of time, there's more to say, but that's the Tamsis Advorim. So when you learn Seder night, see if you can put all the caches together and come up with an answer.